I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. You used to rock me in the cradle of your arms. You said you'd hold me till the pains of life were gone. You said you'd comfort me times like these, and now I need you, now I need you, and you are gone. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. Since you've gone and left me, there's been so little beauty, but I know I saw it clearly through your eyes. Now the world outside is such a cold and bitter place. Here inside I have few things that will console. And when I try to hear your voice above the storms of life, then I remember all the things that I was told.
Sweet Honey and the Rock, with Wanting Memories. That is from their 1993 album, Still on the Journey. And in a sense, this relates to all of us. How impactful it could be, and it actually is, when people in our lives teach us things. And when they're gone, we miss them. And we have only as comfort that they have taught us how to see things, how to see the world through our own eyes. That is a gift in and of itself. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're going to get personal and philosophical today about voting. I know. It's not the kind of thing that brings tears to your eyes, unless, of course, you're discussing the current state of affairs. It is not a pretty picture, not a pretty picture at all. What shapes our attitudes about voting? Why do we or do we not vote? Should voting be mandatory? Do we vote with our heads or with our hearts? What is the point of it all? When we look at what's happening today, my God, if you ever wanted to get an idea of what Dante was thinking about his famed Inferno, you just look at what's happening today, not just in the United States, but around the world, and you say, well, this might be what he had meant, what he had envisioned. This might be what informed his classic work. But really, we have to think about this business of voting. And specifically, in this time, when all kinds of things are pushed together to form a predetermined program, and therefore a predetermined result. We see in the current election cycle that anything goes. This is the lyingest president we have ever had, and he has contaminated his circle. If I'm giving some some credit here to the possibility that many people came into his circle uncontaminated. But how is it possible that this is what we have? This is the person occupying the highest office of our country. And then you filter that down through Congress, through the House of Representatives, to your state governments and your local governments, and even your community governments. What the heck has happened here? How have we decided to totally dispense, almost totally, I can't say totally, almost totally dispense with the idea that we ought to have some kind of standards, we ought to have some kind of way of getting popular sentiment to affect policy? It is not government by the people, for the people. It's a manufactured government that has nothing to do, as we can see, particularly at the state and federal levels, and at the city level too. Government has very little to do with the needs and the wishes and the concerns of the people. I've talked about voting. We should come to regard voting not so much as a civic duty, but as an entrepreneurial endeavor. Since we're in a capitalist society and everybody's talking about, I mean, the bottom line is profits, right? We should regard voting the same way. What does it profit us to vote? I mean, other than the psychic reward that we have done the right thing, we find upstanding citizens, and we, you know, we doing this thing called voting as a way to demonstrate our contribution to what we call democracy. We have to play hardball, it seems. My vote will therefore be seen as my investment. I'm making an investment. But if you look at what you're investing in and you see decades of a record of consistent failure, is it a wise choice to invest in a system that produces decades of consistent failure? Are you smart to do something like that? When you have nothing protecting your investment except your investment itself, that doesn't fly. What is the collateral? What is a safeguard against your investment being shot to hell by whatever forces? Competence, the market forces, whatever. What is your collateral? And why do we invest with the full knowledge that things may or may not, and more than likely, may not go our way? They're not listening to us. So what exactly are we, what is this product that we are investing in? Who is the board of directors here? And then you, if you have the stomach for it, and you do some research and you find out who the board of directors is. You want to crawl into the bed and draw the sheets over your head and go to sleep for a very long time. You don't want to face the fact that these are the people guiding the ship, because supposedly they're more knowledgeable than you and me in the fine art of guiding ships. They have no experience. Our president and a vast number of people who are operating in his cabinet and in his as advisors to him have no experience whatsoever. Look, the president can't open and close an umbrella, for crying out loud. Did you see that? It's raining and he's going up the staircase to Air Force One, and he can't close an umbrella. And he leaves it there, just leaves it there, and he goes onto the plane. That tells you something. The small details overwhelm this guy. He has no connection at all with how the world works. He has no such skills. But here we are on the cusp of the midterm elections, and we're thinking the same old tired way that we've been thinking ever since we, quote, got the right to vote, unquote. We're dumber now than we've ever been about the value of the vote, how the vote is to be used as a strategic weapon that takes dead aim at this thing called government that is organized to be in our way. It's organized to obstruct our progress. It's organized to frustrate us. And we're doing the same thing as voters today as we did before. Other people have changed up. The whole point of this year's election and the whole point of 2016 was that it was a breaking point for the Democrat, for the Republican Party, and for Donald Trump. He didn't follow the rules. His whole thing is, I have some ideas about ways that we could distract people and get them fired up and change this whole scenario, the whole political landscape. And in all of that, we could get done what we want to get done, put our people in particular places that will put a stranglehold on government for a long time. Even if I lose the election the next time around, there is enough of an infrastructure in only 2 years. In only 2 years, there is enough of an infrastructure in every part of government to sustain exactly what we want. In the White House, in Congress, in the Senate, in the House, in the US Supreme Court, we did a program on that showing that in less than 2 years, this president has put his infrastructure in place, not just for him, but for the new style of politics. He has redefined the purpose of politics. What is politics, according to him? I'm not saying this is what it ought to be. I'm saying this is the way he has redefined it. Politics is I get what I want. And what I want is everything. That's politics. I get to win in order to get what I want. And what I want is everything. It took 2 years. He's never been in office. He has no political experience whatsoever. But here we are. And like lemmings, we, the voters, are expected to turn out, because now this is a reflection, a personal judgment on us, a personal reflection on us as it relates to our sense of what it means to be a good citizen. The other folks dispensed with that a long time ago. They don't care about being good citizens. A whole bunch of people around Trump have been indicted, and he's close to being indicted as well. They don't care about that. The point I'm making is that that is not necessarily the right thing to do. In fact, it's not. But what I'm pointing to here is what can happen and what does happen when people make up their minds to be revolutionary about something. Yeah, I know. Trump is a revolutionary. I say absolutely. In one fell swoop, he created the AD and BC of policy, of politics. Politics today doesn't closely resemble politics of yesterday. And still we're following rules that no longer apply. Still we haven't come to the realization that we got to try something new. Something new doesn't mean that you talk louder while you're on the protest line. You amp up the volume and, you know, free us, that kind of thing. That's not something new. What is the something new? The Democratic Party hasn't had a clue. The other third parties don't have a clue. They're busy talking to themselves and talking in a vacuum and talking without understanding that there is a vast difference between hypotheticals and reality. This notion that the Democrats have that politics, you pull out the old manual from the 1960s and you sing rousing choruses of we shall overcome, as if that changes anything. It doesn't. Well, we need to pull out the vote. But from whom? You lost your audience a long time ago. And that's what exactly what you wanted to do. You did not want the burden of leadership. You did not know how to lead, how to create your own political base and keep it. You had the same contempt for your folks as the other side did. The only time you knew that the black community and the Latino community existed was around voting time. And then you dared to have the gumption, the gall, to saddle them with the blame for not voting. Why should they vote? As I said, we should recognize what is happening here. They are being entrepreneurial. Nothing's coming to them after they invest in your party. Nothing is coming to them. No basics are coming to them. The communities are unstable. They've been written off so that the new wave of real estate expansion would gobble up their communities, and then they'll have to move on, perhaps to the Mojave Desert. We're talking about, you know, lofty ideas. People in Flint, Michigan can't get a decent glass of water. Children in school can't drink water all day. What are you talking about? And for this, they have to understand and take on the burden of failed leadership. Failed leadership. And still, hand over their power, hand over the little bit of money, the little currency that they have, give it to the Democratic Party to continue their failed leadership. No. Time to think as an entrepreneur. Let's all elevate ourselves to the level of entrepreneur. We're calculating the value of our vote, and you calculate the possibility of better returns on your investment. If you don't get it, if you haven't had it, what is the point of continuing the self-destructive cycle? It makes no sense at all. So today, I want to plant a little bug in your head. This is beyond this disregard and just ignore all these things that we have associated with voting. It's all emotional stuff. It's all emotion. It has worked like a charm. Why? Because they know us better than we do. All they have to do, come out and say Martin Luther King and civil rights. Oh, well, they got you. You got to vote. Because not to vote is to betray Martin Luther King himself. Do you think that Martin Luther King today, in the years since the civil rights to now, do you think he would be satisfied with our condition, our collective condition? Is this a democratic arrangement here? Here's the funny part. Even as they tell us to come out to vote, they're shutting down polling sites in your own neighborhood. Votes will disappear as they have for 40, 50 years or more. We have been living in this state of self-imposed stultification. We have stultified ourselves. It's time to change it. It's time to change it. Whether people agree with it or not, in the established political arena, everybody's operating according to Trump and Trump's redefinition of the entire political process, as disgusting and as bizarre as it is, as racist as it is. Everybody's organized now according to their interpretation of his philosophy of what politics is, and we will all suffer for it. And why? It was completely unnecessary. But they created the hole through which Trump barreled. He came right through. He saw it, as anybody paying attention would have seen it. And he is an entrepreneur. His whole idea is it going to work for me? Does it suit my purposes? Is it going to make me richer? Yes, distorted by our definition. It's a distorted, disgusting, but we're not saying anything about the legitimacy of the idea when you see the context in which he's operating, and he's applying the dog-eat-dog mentality of the business world to politics, and how you get what you need to get by being single-minded and by putting in place a system. And that's why they call it a system. You don't even have to be there, and it will work. So that's what I want us to think about today and discuss today. Your own personal attitudes about this thing called voting. Is it time? Did you or have you changed your attitudes about voting? And if so, in what ways? Should we change our attitudes about voting? Should we become strategic voters? What does that mean? Should we become entrepreneurial voters? What does that mean? I leave it up to you to tell us what all of this means when we come back from this short break, right after this.
Memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I think on the things that make me feel so wonderful when I was young. I think on the things that make me laugh, make me dance, make me sing. I think on the things that make me grow into a being full of pride.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're connecting with each other today on the matter of voting and the vote at 888-874-4888. What do you see as a way to reconfigure our attitudes and relationship to this thing called voting and the vote? What is it supposed to do? And in what ways can we enhance the power of our vote by radically altering what we do in the name of voting? 888-874-4888. Jeff from New Jersey, you start us off.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Well, hello. I'm going to say that we do need to vote. And I say it this way. If you believe in the divine creator, when you die and you go to heaven and you're judged, he's going to ask you, not whether your team won or lost, he's going to ask you how you played the game. Were you on the right side of things? Now, we don't have a lot of choices, but we must make the best choice possible. Anyone who is in power, to me, divine creator put him in power. I think that Trump was put in power in order to have us choose the right side. And he's not, I just don't believe he won the election. Too many things
We're off the rails already. It's not about what we believe. It's about what do you assess the situation as? I've talked about us reconstructing our own identity, if you will, as voters.
That is part of it as we do the reconstruction. If we're going to change what we're going to do and vote and get people into office that represent us and not the elites, we have to go to the base of it. The base of it is this: if you vote on electronic machines, the last person with the machine can tell you who won the vote. So we need to go back to paper ballots. We need to go back to one person, one vote, and counting them that way, counting them by hand, not by machine, because it doesn't matter.
I'm not talking about whether we vote by ballot or whether we vote by machine or whether we do absentee voting. This is not something that I think is
relevant. It's relevant. I'm getting around to it. But it's relevant.
Revolutionary radical move? Nobody I know who is voting now is pleased with the investment, the return on investment over several decades. How do we stop it now? That's the question.
The way you stop it now is you go out and you first of all, you have to home grow your politicians. That's from City Hall, from the school board, through your senators. They need to be homegrown. They need to live where you live. The revolution will come when you hold those people accountable from your neighborhoods. All right.
You're giving me the same answer we have gotten for decades. You're giving me the same answer.
We will get the same result. But we haven't done that. If you look at who's running for mayor in Detroit, the people in Detroit don't even live in Detroit. Right? They have no accountability to the citizens. They cannot walk out of their doors and be confronted by citizens on a day-to-day basis or confronted with the problems of the city on a day-to-day basis. And it's the same thing that's going on because we have...
Let me ask you then, in this scenario, and you're right, what is called for as a dramatic, revolutionary action that could stop this now?
Either one of two things. You don't vote, or you write someone in. You pick your candidate and you write them in. We have to organize on a certain level, but the main thing is you have to do, it doesn't matter what you do, because we're going to have to vote for somebody, whether we have a good candidate or a bad candidate. If you put someone up, you still have to vote for them. Even if they're homegrown, you have to vote for them. We have to make sure that the votes are accountable. Now, after that's done, we organize, and again, you groom people in your neighborhood to become your representatives from your neighborhood. If they don't live there, then you don't accept them.
You're still thinking future. I'm saying, if we got serious today, what would we do about elections right now?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't think there's much you can do about elections right now, but what you could do in your community is take care of yourself. If you can take your city, and your city is a Democratic city or a Black city or a Hispanic city or whatever it is, if you can get on the same page and say, listen, these things that are coming down from the federal government, here's how we combat them. That's the initial, that's all you can do right now. Because everything else is bought and paid for.
Okay.
To me, everything
Thank
else is bought and paid for.
Thank you for getting us started today, Jeff. Thank you. Lisa from New York. What's your answer to the question I'm posing? We're not talking about, as old Reverend Ike used to say, we're not talking pie in the sky by and by when you die. We're talking about what could you, he used to ask, you or say, you could get your pie now with ice cream on top. All right. How do we get our pie now with ice cream on top? Lisa.
My eyes were opened. I am not involved in any of this electoral politics unless I see a candidate who is worthy of that. It took my 18-year-old son to tell me that there was a Democratic congressional candidate in our district who was worth supporting. I helped him. He did not win his primary election. The Democrats have been calling me, coming to my house to ask if I'm supporting the person who won. And I am telling them in no uncertain terms, no, I am not supporting the corporate Democrat who moved into the district so that he could run for Congress. And I don't think he has any of our best interests at heart. He was one of there were seven candidates. There were only two who were not supporting Medicare for All. So there's no reason for me to support him, just as there was no reason for me to support Hillary Clinton after she cheated Bernie Sanders out of the primary win. And so I didn't vote for her. I voted for Jill Stein. I will not vote for this Democratic candidate. I will vote for the Green Party candidate. So far, I still do vote, but I only vote for people who I feel, as you said, this is a good investment. I voted for Ralph Nader. I vote for Howie Hawkins. I do not vote for people like Andrew Cuomo and Hillary Clinton.
All right. Now take this view of yours. Take it a bit bigger.
Okay.
How would your view, your actions, your approach, how would it work on a nationwide scale?
Well, on a nationwide scale, I wish that we had more media outlets like yours or, you know, to tell us the truth and so people would be more educated. Suppose everyone decided, well, wait a minute, these Democrats are not helping me just because I dislike the Republicans and Donald Trump. That doesn't mean that, oh, let's turn the House blue. That doesn't help us. But people don't realize that, and it's very frustrating. I mean, I feel like people don't understand what I'm saying, and they think that these Democrats are going to do something for them. You know, if we all voted for the candidate whose policies were benefiting us, it would be a different world. Suppose Ralph Nader had become president. But we're always told
here's the reality that we are dealing with today.
What's
even
that?
Well-meaning candidates, even candidates who understand that the number one thing should be their relationship with their constituencies and the needs of their constituencies and working for their constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
They are nonetheless part of a system that will tolerate involvement only so much. They're not going to allow your average elected official to tinker with policy. They're not going to let the people tinker with policy. So even when you elect a well-meaning a representative, that representative is working within the confines and constraints of the party.
You're right.
So what do you do?
I guess vote, you know, everyone becomes independents, or we just abandon electoral politics. But, you know, we have to deal with whatever the result is. To me, it's more important to just deal with issues such as, let's say, becoming a vegetarian, trying to deal with climate change, you know, just trying to help deal with the issues that really are important. I wish we were all out in the streets, you know, demanding that we have student loan forgiveness and that we don't have to put up with these, you know.
You realize what you're saying.
Yeah, that we should get out of the streets.
That the people still end up having to do the work.
True.
Okay. So this is my question. Why are we electing people to do this? They're not going to do it. They can't do it, or they won't do it, but they're not going to do it.
I agree.
So what is the answer? We have to change. We have to radically change what we mean by citizen action or voter action. We have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I hope you'll enlighten me even more as to what we need to do. Thank you for your show.
You gave the answer. The answer today, you got a great answer. We have to be in the streets. That's exactly the answer. We have to mobilize in our own interests, conscious of the fact that no matter how we look at it, they have designed the system to limit our influence. Limit our participation, and we have to find ways to overcome that.
I agree.
Thank
can
you
I
so
say
much
one more thing? We can we can help to strangle the system by definitely not giving any money to these political parties. You know, when I was helping Bernie Sanders, I was, you know, still giving contributions. Then I was helping Jill Stein. I'm just not involved. I'm not involved in that anymore. And I can't afford to be involved. I have my third child in college, and it is much more unaffordable than it was when my older children went to college. And I don't see anyone doing anything about it, and it makes me angry.
I know. I have been angry for years. 20 years ago, at least, could be more, I said I'm not voting.
I remember you said that, and I agree. Now I see it, and I agree with you. And the other thing I wanted to say, there was a gentleman maybe a week ago who wasn't able to finish his the point he was making because it was time for the show to end. But he mentioned the fact that we need to spend our money in the right places if we can. And we need to boycott, because that's what it's all about.
I found out that I discovered if I'm electing somebody to do A, B, C, and D, and I find myself doing A, B, C, and D, what is the point? I'm being redundant myself. It makes no sense. So I figured out that until I could sense that there is a particular advantage in voting in any particular election, I'm out. Thanks, Lisa, for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Wonderful talking to you. Jeff from Brooklyn, you're on the air. You're the other Jeff, the Jeff from Brooklyn.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, Trace. It's lovely to hear your voice, and you sound very healthy and very happy to hear that.
Thank you.
For a quick question for you. I had actually contacted the station yesterday. I want to send a book to you, and they said I should send it to the station. They'll forward it to you. Is that your preferred method?
Yes, that's the easiest.
Thank you. On the issue of the voting, I personally haven't voted maybe only once in my life. As you can probably tell from my accent, I'm not native to this country. And I've been here 20-some years as a permanent resident, but that doesn't allow me to vote. And in England, just timing, I think I only got to vote once. So I've never really seen the point of voting as such. Although, obviously, if you come from a working-class background, it's ingrained into you the struggle that went into fighting for that vote. Now, with that said, I think we're at the point now where the voting machine scandal, scams, digitalized voting is so unreliable, and as well as the other voter fraud, it's almost we have to try and look at a new way forward in order to, you know, to try and figure a way to participate in the electoral system without. It just seems outdated to me. I don't necessarily know what the answer is, but you had mentioned at the start of the show mandatory voting, and I haven't given that a lot of thought until you mentioned it, so it's like in the past 20 minutes, but I'm probably in favor of maybe doing that because at least that would be a head count on everyone tiding with their social security number, and so it would be maybe more difficult for people to try and you throw people off the voter register. But I would say that we definitely need to have an opportunity to also add into that a vote of no confidence. And I think that's a way forward in itself, is if people have no confidence in the two people that are put before us, Trump and Clinton, okay, bring on the next ones, Pence, and you just go down the line until the people start to go, well, I kind of like this guy, kind of like this woman. Maybe we can work with these people and just see where it goes, because I'm sure the pushback would be something like, oh, we can't have elections going on forever and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But politicians spend their entire careers, it seems, going around raising money. Why wouldn't they invest their time and energy in real kind of voting things like... you know, just as things used to be in terms of just getting out and hustling. Does that make any sense to you or any of the listeners?
Well, we will know when they call in and say. Yeah. Your suggestion of a no-confidence vote was something that I had raised some time ago.
Yeah, but yeah. I think in some countries they have that. I mean, in England they do have something like that where there's a vote of no confidence, but I'm not sure that's just within the parliament itself or within the, I mean, you had Brexit, which is a different thing, a referendum, so...
No, you could take a people's no confidence vote. It is valid as some kind of a measure of how the process is impacting on the people and what their estimation is of the effectiveness of what you're calling government. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Well,
have an informal, and it should carry the same weight as any other poll. Polls carry a lot of weight in this country.
Well, it would definitely at this time, I mean, there is no confidence, it seems. You know, I think that's the generally what, you know, I interact with people of all different left, right, center, although I don't necessarily like those labels, but there's no confidence in the system. At all, it seems. And people have their different ideas of how we get through this. But I think ultimately, if you're going to be like philosophical about it, you can only really change yourself. And I see people, you know, a Republican person that I knew during the Bush years has changed drastically now. So they've changed themselves. They might be more interested in vitamins and not eating as much meat. You know, they just thought that was like a radical lefty thing. And now everybody's conscious of that because of healthcare costs, aside from the animal cruelty and what have you. So I think there's, you know, it comes down to people changing themselves. But with the system we have going on, not just in this country, but where everybody's just at each other's throats, and we're all fighting on behalf of a Clinton or a Trump, who are kind of, you know, I don't want to call them names, but they're just, you know, scum rises to the top, don't you know? That would be my take.
Well, here's what we need to do. I think we need to have this conversation continued, which we will do tomorrow, because there are quite a few people who haven't gotten on yet.
Yeah. I'm sorry,
but No. This is what this station is for. This is what my program is about, getting people to use the idea of occupying public space with their thoughts and their opinions. And we trade our ideas with each other. That's how we grow and educate each other. So we still haven't answered the question, and we will continue tomorrow to answer the question. We have given parts and pieces of a possible approach, a new approach, but there's no question we need a new approach. This thing isn't working.
Right.
We ought to shoot it. I hate to be violent, but give it a decent burial. This is not working. Whatever you think is a good idea as a substitute idea, let's continue talking about it, and let's see whether it's feasible that a radical new approach can be taken, and taken now. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of our program today. We really have to cut our ties with old ideas that have served their time. They haven't served us very well as people, the regular people. And it's time to overhaul things. Throw it out if it's not working and do something new. But we don't seem to have any ideas about what's new? What is a new way of doing things, a new and effective way of doing things? And we need it terribly. We need it now. Because this is just not working. It stopped working back in the 1960s and 70s. It's not working today. Most everything achieved under the banner of civil rights acts, They're kind of useless today in the forms that they're in and in the ways that they're implemented and mostly not implemented. We've got to change that. Come up with something new. And we must do that as a top priority. This is a major priority. Like I said, we have to recast ourselves in a new mold, as we have to think entrepreneurially. We must be able to identify the profit, if you will. I hate to put it this way, but what are the benefits and profits of our investment? Are they working? This thing we call the vote that we hand over every time there is an election, we go like sheep to the voting booth and we cast our vote according to our conditioning. Vote for this person, so we vote for that person. Without any idea of what the benefits might be, if any, to voting a particular way or a particular party. We've got to end it. We have to be as unpredictable as possible. Then nobody should be able to predict what we are going to do when we're voting or if we're voting. That's, I think, a great and novel approach. Create as much uncertainty as possible about what we are going to do and what we may not do. And vote specifically in our interests. Thanks so much for listening. Let's join each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.
I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. You used to rock me in the cradle of your arms. You said you'd hold me till the pains of life were gone. You said you'd comfort me in times like these, and now I need